Hello, Sunsounds listeners. This is Andy Bombeck, which means once again it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour, I'll be reading picture books. And then the second half hour, I'm going to continue with the novel that I've been reading now for about a month, titled Angus, Thongs, and Full Frontal Snogging, Confessions of Georgia Nicholson. All right, so let's begin today's program with the picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled Grandpa's Cigar Box. And then it's Black Beach, A Community, An Oil Spill, and the Origin of Earth Day. And then A Taste of Home. Foods from around the world are waiting just around the block. Opal's Greenwood Oasis, Lizzie Stewart, Juniper Jupiter, a real-life superhero, and if we have time, I'll finish up the first half hour with Lemony Snicket, Goldfish Ghost. So, it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today, titled Grandpa's Cigar Box. In spring, when Jamie visits Grandpa's house, it smells like lilacs. Jamie runs into the living room and jumps on the sofa. Hi, Grandpa. What's in my cigar box today? She sniffs. Chocolate. A marshmallow bunny sits next to a package of flower seeds. What are we going to do today? Jamie licks her fingers. We're going to plant marigolds. They kneel in the garden and sprinkle the tiny seeds. Let's water them. Jamie grabs the garden hose. Water sprays all over Grandpa. Uh-oh. Sorry, Grandpa. Oh, that's okay. Now I don't have to take a shower today. In the summer, when Jamie visits Grandpa's house, it smells like freshly mowed grass. Jamie leaps on the sofa. Hi, Grandpa. What's in my cigar box today? She lifts the lid. Yum, orange gumdrops and swimming goggles. What are we going to do today? Jamie smacks her lips. Let's go swimming. Jamie climbs the ladder. Whee! Oh, you got me all wet, chuckles Grandpa. Jamie laughs. You're already wet. All you need is soap. In autumn, when Jamie visits Grandpa's house, it smells like pumpkin pie. Jamie plops on the sofa. Hi, Grandpa. What's in my cigar box today? She peeks in the box. Oh, candy corn and wax lips. What are we going to do today? Jamie mumbles. Let's carve a jack-o'-lantern. They scoop out the pumpkin seeds. My hands are sticky, Grandpa. He fills the sink with water. Jamie climbs on a stool and smacks her hands. Water splashes on Grandpa. Oops, sorry, Grandpa, Jamie giggles. There you go, giving me a shower again, Grandpa smiles. In winter, when Jamie visits Grandpa's house, it smells like burning wood. Where are you, Grandpa? Are you hiding from me? She grabs the cigar box and runs down the hallway. She finds him in bed. The cigar box is empty, Grandpa. I'm sorry, Jamie. I don't feel well. What are we going to do today? Jamie frowns. Grandpa coughs. She taps the box. I have an idea. She carries it into the kitchen and rummages through the cupboards. She carries it into the study and digs through the desk drawers. She fills a glass of water. When she returns to the bedroom, she lays the box on Grandpa's lap and gives him a glass of water. Grandpa, open the cigar box. Oh, boy! Candy canes, a coloring book, and crayons. My favorites. Thank you, Jamie. Let's color together, Jamie says. She whispers in his ear, Grandpa, can I have one of your candles? Of course you can. Grandpa hands Jamie a candy cane and spills the water all over Jamie. Jamie hugs Grandpa. Now, I don't have to take a bath today. Black Beach, a community, an oil spill, and the origin of Earth Day. Sam was in her favorite class, drawing a picture of her favorite place, when the principal came in and whispered in the teacher's ear, January 1969, Santa Barbara Love, draw your special spot in our community. And that's what's written on the board. Sam's teacher frowned as she walked over to the window and stared out at the sea. What did the principal say? What was her teacher looking for? Back home, Sam's parents told her something terrible had happened. Union Oil had caused an oil spill when they were removing a drill from the ocean floor. Oil was now gushing up into the Santa Barbara Channel. Her mother called it a blowout, like a cap had popped off a shaken-up bottle of soda and couldn't be put back on. 3 days later, the thick, dark oil started washing ashore. What would her favorite place look like now? When Sam went down to see, she was anxious. With each step, she could feel the weight of her worry. It was even worse than she had feared. The beach was black. The ocean was black. The sparkling waves that used to crash down, whoosh up, and tickle Sam's toes were silent. All she could hear was slop, slop, slop. The whole town looked for ways to help, but no one really knew how. Even though offshore drilling was extremely risky, Union Oil hadn't prepared for a disaster like this. So the people of Santa Barbara did what they could to make things better. Sam's father joined a group of fishermen throwing straw into the sea to sop up the oil. Sam's mother and other volunteers used towels to pick up seabirds stranded on the beach. Their feathers were coated in oil, and they weren't able to fly. Sam felt helpless. All she could do was sit back and watch. All night, the news broadcast scenes from Santa Barbara. Millions of people across the country tuned in. No one had ever seen anything like this before. Oil continued to seep into the ocean. Whenever Sam thought about it, she got sad. But then her sadness turned to anger. What had happened to her favorite place, to the birds and the beach and the blue sea, wasn't right. Sam was done sitting back and watching. It was time to stand up. She and her friends filled bottles with oil from the beach and mailed them to politicians. If the people in power saw what had happened, then maybe they would work to prevent it from ever happening again. News of the spill continued to grow, and more people started paying attention. Even President Nixon came on a helicopter to see. 7 months after oil burst from the ocean floor, a U.S. senator named Gaylord Nelson visited Santa Barbara. He had been an environmental activist for years, but had often struggled to convince other politicians that the planet needed to be protected. When he saw oil was still floating on the surface of the sea, he knew he had to try to help. Back in Washington, D.C., Senator Nelson hired an eager young team to begin organizing a national day of environmental celebration and protest. It would be called Earth Day. Their goal was to create a grassroots movement and have local communities share the environmental issues that mattered most to them. If enough people participated, politicians would have to start paying attention to the needs of the planet. and Earth Day was April 22nd. Soon, news of the event reached school children and their teachers, and they began to prepare their own activities for Earth Day. When April 22nd, 1970 finally arrived, Sam's school put on a giant Earth Day assembly. Everyone brought a can to recycle and gathered outside to learn about the benefits of beekeeping and the environmental harm caused by the insect-killing chemical DDT. At thousands of schools across the country, children spent the day talking about environmental problems and what could be done to make them better. The more Sam learned, the more powerful she felt. There were so many ways to help. On that first Earth Day, 20 million people took a stand. Some came out to celebrate the environment, while others protested and demanded change. A movement was born. Back at the beach in Santa Barbara, the seabirds and seals slowly returned. It would take years for their habitat to heal. Before the spill, Sam liked to pretend the oil rigs weren't a part of her favorite place, but now she no longer wanted to look past them. And there's a sign, "Keep our beach clean." There was still more work to do, and Sam and her friends were just getting started. A Taste of Home. Foods from around the world are waiting just around the block. A child of the city steps outside with an empty bag. His mother calls from the window, "Bring back a taste of home." Feet dance along familiar cracks in the sidewalk. Storefronts and street signs greet him like old friends. As he wanders, what is home? To him, home is the street he knows better than any other, where his family has lived for as long as he can remember. Home is a line of buildings rising like stone giants into the sky, a stately synagogue down the block, a kosher grocery store around the corner. But to his mother, home is also another place, where she lived when she was a child, far away yet close enough in memory. A land flowing with milk and honey. Because home is not only where you are, it is where you came from. And to children of the city, home is more than the landmarks of their neighborhood. A bogata guarded by a golden cat. An indoor market with fruits and vegetables of every shape and color. A church with kaleidoscope windows. Reminders of an island paradise their parents called home. A building with a pagoda roof. Roast duck hanging in a restaurant window. Shouts and laughter ringing through a crowded market. Or maybe home is a place they never saw themselves, that only grandparents or great-grandparents knew, and the sights and smells and sounds of here are like stories about there. And home can change over time. The places we love might move or disappear, and new ones might replace them. A welcoming mosque. A row of restaurants. A grocery store stocked with spices and oils. Warm comforts from a land of rivers. But maybe home is not a place at all. Maybe home is people who gather to share and celebrate. Children with roots in many places who came together to walk the streets of their city. So the child of the city brings his friends back to the street he knows so well. He greets street signs and storefronts. He dances along cracks in the sidewalk. He looks into his bag, now filled with taste of home, and realizes he never left home at all. Opal's Greenwood Oasis. Hello, my name is Opal Brown. I live in Greenwood. That's part of the city of Tulsa in the state of Oklahoma. I just finished third grade here in 1921. On Mondays in Greenwood, all the children wake up and eat breakfast. We grab our books, get on our bikes, and ride off to school. We learn reading, writing, and arithmetic, music, and art, and physical education. When the children are at school, the mothers cook and clean. They wash and cut hair at Madam CJ's. They serve sodas and work the counter at Williams Drugstore. They help customers measure their sizes at the department stores. They make dinner and iron laundry at their own homes. While the children and the mothers are busy, the fathers are working hard too. They read long papers at the law office. They load heavy groceries and fix cars. They help sick patients and clean dirty teeth. They run hotels and shops. On Saturdays in Greenwood, children run and ride through the streets. We go on errands for our parents. We ask for nickels and dimes to buy sodas and burgers. Grown-ups sit on porches and at lunch counters catching up. Families go to the matinee at the Williams Dreamland Theater. On Sundays in Greenwood, just about everybody goes to church. We dress up fancy and behave our very best, even though it's crowded and hot. We sing hymns and listen while the pastor preaches. When service is over, we walk home to eat cold-cut sandwiches and salad for lunch, while the women cook up big dinners. In Greenwood, we have everything we need, and it might surprise you to know that everyone looks like me. This week, it's Memorial Day, so everything but the drugstore is closed. Even Williams's Theater shut down at noon because the community picnic starts at 1 o'clock. Early in the morning, I was pulling empty cardboard boxes from the toting truck for Mama to pack food. Daddy had to go to the car repair shop to work on the truck before the picnic. My big brother, Sammy, left early as always. He delivers the newspaper every day except Christmas. Daddy and I wave at Dick Rowland as he left his auntie's dames. "See you later, Dick," Daddy called, walking outside. "Have a good day, sir," Dick said back. "Daddy, isn't Dick going the wrong way? The picnic is that way." "No, he's going to work at the shoeshine parlor on Main." "Where's that?" I asked. "I thought everything was closed today." "Everything in Greenwood is closed. The white folks don't close all their stores for Memorial Day." "Why not?" "Over here, we like to celebrate holidays all together. They do things a lot different on that side of town." "How do they do things?" "Opal, that's a long talk for another day." Later, I was sitting at the table with a book on one side and snap peas in front of me. "I don't see my cinnamon," Mama kept reaching behind spice jars and banging cans on the counter. "And now it'll take too long for me to go get it." "We forgot it at the store." "I can go on my bike," I shouted and jumped up. "Are you sure you're ready? If something happens, what will you do?" asked the closest grown-up for help. Mama nodded and grabbed her purse. She tucked some money into the small pocket of my dress. "Okay, you go straight there and back. Do you hear?" I started down the block with a huge smile on my face. I had spent the long weekend practicing bike riding with Daddy, even though it was hard. I remember his calm voice telling me I could do it. That made me feel proud. Turning the corner, easy now, I saw Dr. Bridgewater's office on my right and the Tulsa Star newspaper on my left. As I came close to Madam CJ's, old Mrs. Little called out to me, "Opal Brown, is that you riding down here all alone?" "Yes, ma'am. I'm fetching cinnamon from the store for my mama." "You be careful, you hear?" She waved me on, but looked worried. "Yes, ma'am, I will." I rode past the Royal Hotel and Reverend Neanderland's barbershop, the theater, and Vernon AME. Far up ahead, I could see men setting out tables for the picnic, covering them with potato sack cloths. I pulled up to Mr. Mann's store and went inside. "Opal Brown, did you just ride here all by yourself?" "Yes, Mr. Mann, I did. Mama needs cinnamon, quick. We forgot it on Friday," I said, like a grown-up. "Where's your daddy?" he asked. "At the shop. Had to fix the toting truck tires before the picnic." I carried the small jar to the counter and dug the money out of my pocket. Mr. Mann added up the cost and took my money. "And, I guess, Sammy's at the paper?" "Yes, sir. The news doesn't take days off," I told him, what Sammy always says. Mr. Mann chuckled without smiling. "All right, then. Let me wrap this up good, since you're carrying it in that bike basket. That way, if you fall, you won't lose any. See you get back home safe, Miss Opal." "Yes, sir. Thank you. See you at the picnic." I smiled big and waved. I tied the basket ribbons around the paper sack. Then I started off slowly. I waved at my best friend, Esther, as I pedaled past Mr. Barry's jitney service and Mr. Jackson's funeral home. I passed the houses of the Joneses, the Roland Fords, the Smiths, and then the Millers, right before our house. I ran inside with Mama Cinnamon. "Oh, good, just in time. Any longer, and the pies wouldn't have time to bake." Mama started mixing right away. "Are you all right? Did you fall?" "I toppled once, but I didn't fall down. That's good." Around 11:30, Daddy came back in from work. His eyebrows were scrunched up like he was thinking real hard. But I couldn't wait to tell him my news. He hugged me tight around the shoulders and then went to wash up. Right after Sammy came in, everyone started grabbing boxes and carried them to the truck. Then I saw Dick Roland running toward Auntie Dame's. "Hey, look," I said, "why's Dickie running like that? He looks like he's being chased." When I was delivering, I heard a few men talking about some troubles at the parlor where Dick shines shoes, Sammy told us. Daddy gave Mama that grown-up's only look. He looked between Sammy and me. "Not quite, son. The men have been talking about how something happened between Dick and that white girl who works the elevator at the Drexel. No one's sure what really happened, but I don't want you two talking about it anymore, especially at this picnic." "Yes, sir," we both said together. "All right, that's the last of it." Mama put a big smile on her face, and we all piled into the truck. When we got to help the picnic, I helped carry boxes. Mom and I laid out our blanket next to Esther and her family. After making our plates, I sat with my best friend and told her all about my first ride alone. My prize was a big slice of blueberry pie. What happened to Opal's Oasis? Just hours after the events described in this book, Opal's beloved Greenwood would be destroyed by one of the worst acts of racial violence in American history, known as the Tulsa Race Massacre. 36 blocks of homes and businesses gone, countless lives lost. Greenwood would transform from one of the most prosperous black communities in the country to a ruin. But the people and families of Greenwood were strong. Many would return and rebuild. By 1942, over 200 black-owned businesses would again reside in Greenwood. You can learn more about Greenwood and the history of the Tulsa Race Massacre at the Calalope Group.com /Opal. Lizzie Stewart, Juniper Jupiter, a real-life superhero. Juniper Jupiter is a superhero, a real one. It's no big deal. She's super kind and super brave. She's super fast and super sneaky. She's super strong and she's super, super smart. And she can fly. But, like I said, it's no big deal. Juniper Jupiter loves being a superhero. She really does. Only sometimes she wishes it wasn't such a lonely job. It gets so boring waiting for the super secret mission phone to ring. What Juniper Jupiter needs is a sidekick. She can't believe she hasn't thought of it before. Everything would be much more fun with a sidekick. Juniper starts scribbling down a checklist of things her sidekick needs to be. Brave, strong, smart. A sidekick absolutely must love ice cream. That's rule number one. They should be good at dancing. And a sidekick should be funny. That's very important, too. So she put up some signs, some posters. Are you super? Sidekick wanted. Must like ice cream. Juniper put up posters all over town. She wants the best of the best. She wonders if anyone will come on audition day. It turns out a lot of people want to be a superhero's sidekick. An awful lot of people. And the line is huge, including a giant elephant. Juniper isn't daunted, though. She has a checklist and a brand new pencil, and she's ready to go. The first is too scratchy. That's a cat. The second is too big. That's the elephant. The next are too scared. That's a rabbit. Much too prepared. Somebody outfitted for everything. Too weird, an ostrich. Too much beard, a guy with a giant beard. This is useless, sighs Juniper. I'm never going to find a good sidekick. She's all ready for a supersized sulk when a shadow appears in the doorway. There's one more sidekick left to see. Peanut, and it's her dog. He's brave, he's strong, he's funny, and he's super. This one has it all. Juniper can't believe her luck. Juniper, Jupiter, and Peanut go everywhere together. Peanut is the perfect sidekick. She even loves ice cream. With Peanut at her side, Juniper Jupiter is twice as super. But, like I said, it's no big deal. And this is just a reminder. My name is Andy Bombeck, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, for the second half hour, I'm going to continue reading a novel that I've been reading now for about a month, titled Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging, Confessions of Georgia Nicholson. I am a facsimile of a sham, of a fax of a person. Georgia Nicholson's life is far from simple. Her cat, Angus, is the size of a small Labrador. Her 3-year-old sister may have peed somewhere in her room. And her best friend, Jazz, thinks she looks like an alien just because she accidentally shaved off her eyebrows. Enter the sex god. This just might turn out to be the most fabbity fab year ever. Okay, last week, Georgia and her friends went to Peter's house for kissing lessons. Georgia saw Peter at the big party. Peter started kissing Georgia outside the party. The sex god was not supposed to be at, but he was there to drop someone else off. Now, Elizabeth has a date with the professional snogger or kisser. Thursday, October 15th, noon. Slim has put a ban on levitation. She made an announcement in assembly this morning. She was all shaky and jelly-like. Her jaws were bouncing around like anything. Anyway, she said, this school is like the back streets of Haiti. It must stop forthwith. Any girl found practicing levitation will face the gravest consequences. I, for one, would not like to be in that girl's shoes. I whispered to Ellen, she wouldn't get in any girl's shoes. How much do you think each leg weighs? Imagine the size of her knickers. You could probably get 2 divots out of them. Then we got the eagle eye from Hawkeye for giggling. 2 p.m. I feel like killing something. If I was that sort of person, I'd scare a first former. As it is, I will have to content myself with hiding nauseating P. Green's pencil case. 3 p.m. On my way to science class, I saw Lindsay. How wet can you be? She really is Mrs. Wet. She has the wettest haircut known to humanity. All curled under at the bottom, I saw her legs in hockey, and they are really spindly. Little spindly legs, like she has been in a wheelchair and not been walking for years. And also, when she is concentrating, she wears big googly glasses. I bet she keeps those well hidden when she goes out with Pratt Boy. Oh, hell's teeth. It's my date in 4 hours. The horrible thing is that I don't want to go. I just don't. There's nothing wrong with him or anything. I just can't be bothered somehow. My bedroom, midnight. I wish I'd never started this snogging business. I feel like I've been attacked by whelks. I can't see Peter anymore. Why is he so keen on me anyway? I haven't had a chance to say more than 2 words before I'm attacked by the whelks again. I can't go out with him anymore. How can I tell him, though? 1 a.m. I'll make Jazz do it. Friday, October 16th, 9 p.m. What a week. I got Jazz to dump Peter for me. I said for her to let him down gently. So she told him that I had a personal problem. He asked what, and she said that I thought I was a lesbian. Cheers, Jazz. Monday, October 19th, 4 p.m. It's all round school that I'm a lesbian. in games, we were in the changing room, and Miss Stamp came in to change out of her gear. Suddenly, everyone had disappeared, leaving me on my own with her. She really has got a mustache. Does she not notice? Friday, October 23rd, 8 p.m., Tom phoned Jazz, and they're going on a date to watch Robbie's band. The band is called the Stiff Dillons. I bet it's crap. I bet it's murder. I bet it's double murder. Mom and Dad were talking in the kitchen, and when I came in, they stopped and looked all shifty. Don't get me wrong, I like it when they shut up when I come in. Well, I would like it if I had ever happened before. Mom said, have you ever thought you'd like to see a bit more of the world? Gee. And I said, if you're thinking of trying to persuade me to visit Auntie Kath in Blackpool for Christmas, you can forget it. I can be hilariously cutting when I try. 10 p.m. No matter from what angle you look at it, I do have a huge, squishy nose. I wonder if Mom would pay for me to have plastic surgery. If I went to the doctor and said it was psychologically damaging to the extent that I couldn't go out or do my homework, I wonder if I could have it done on the NHS. Then I remember to have a reality check. I don't have the George Clooney-type doctor from ER, the caring, incredibly good-looking face of medicine. I've got Dr. Wallace, the incredibly fat, red, uncaring face of medicine. It's hard enough getting an aspirin out of him when you've got flu. 11 p.m., Jazz rang. She had a great time with Tom. Did he bring you a present, a bunch of leeks or something? I asked meaningly, but Jazz refused to come down from cloud nine. She said, no, but he's a brilliant dancer. The Stiff Dillons were ace. Robbie is a cool singer. I had to ask in a masochistic way, was Lindsay there? Jazz said, yes, she was. She's quite nice, really. She had her hair up. I was furious with Jazz for being so disloyal and said, oh, it's nice that you've made new friends. I can't help thinking, though, that as Lindsay's best friend, you could advise her that people with massive ears should not wear their hair up. I put the phone down on her. Midnight. Quisty point le point. Monday, October 26th, 7 p.m. I've been ignoring Jazz. It's tiring, but someone has to do it. Thursday, October 29th, 5 p.m. In Slim's office today for a bit of a talking to. Honestly, she has no sense of humor whatsoever. The main difficulty is that she imagines we are at school to learn stuff. And we know we are at school to fill in the idle hours before we go home and hang around with our mates, doing important things, life skills like makeup and playing records and trapping boys. Anyway, it was just one more little trivial thing. We had to have our school photos taken, all of the fourth form and the teachers together, even including Herr Kummer, the rogue male. Ellen and Jazz, Jules and Rosie Mees, and me were all in the back row because we are the tallest. Well, we've started this new craze, which is based around those old TV puppet shows, Stingray and Supercar. Rosie has all the old videos, which we watch. We know all the key phrases like fire retro rockets, and calling international rescue. And we walk around all stiffly, like we are being worked badly by puppeteers. At the moment, we are concentrating on Marina Aquamarina. She was part of an underwater kingdom. Well, her dad was the king of it. But they were being threatened by these horrible fish people. No, they didn't wear cod pieces, but it would have been excellent if they had. Anyway, Marina Aquamarina floated around underwater with her blonde hair trailing behind her and her arms all flopping by her side. All the boys really liked her, especially because she was dumb. When anyone spoke to her, she just blinked in an appealing dumb way. So anyway, when we are being Marina Aquamarina, as well as floating around with our arms by our sides, we are not allowed to speak, just shake our heads and blink. So, for instance, if a perfect said, "Where is your beret?" Well, you could only blink and stare and then float off quickly. But then there is phase two, which is pretending to be a little boy in supercar called Jimmy. Jimmy has a very upturned nose with freckles on it. Obviously, you could just put your finger on your nose and force the tip back and get the snub nose effect. But a more sophisticated method is to use egg cartons. You take one of the bits that the egg fits in and paint some nostrils on it and some freckles. Pop it on some elastic and put it over your own nose. Voila! Instant Jimmy. So when we had the school photos done, Rosie, Ellen, Julia, Jazz, and me all had our Jimmy noses on. When you see the photo, you don't actually notice at first, but then when you look closely, you can see that five girls at the back all have snub noses with freckles. Bloody funny in anyone's language. Not Slim's, though. She was all of a quiver. Do you know how costly it is to have these photographs done? No, you do not, you silly girls. Do you know how ridiculous you make yourselves and the school seem? No, you seem not to know these obvious things. 40 years later, we got let out. Our punishment is that we have to pick up all the litter in the school grounds. That should please Mr. Atwood, the school caretaker. Revenge on us because we called him Elvis. He's only about 109 and the most boring, bad-tempered man in the universe, apart from my dad. I really don't know what is the matter with him lately, my dad. He's always hanging around looking at me. Oh, well, incest seems to run in my family. That's quite a good joke, actually. November, a bit of rough. Thursday, November the 5th, 7 p.m. I hate Guy Fawkes Night. On the way to school, it was a nightmare of jumping jacks and bangers. Boys are obsessed with loud noises and frightening people. I saw Peter Dyer, Welk Boy, but he ignored me and also said something to his mate. He's going out with Kate Stedman now. She's welcome. I wonder if he'll be my first and last boyfriend. Jazz and I are talking again, which is a shame because all she wants to do is talk about Tom. She's miffed because he has to work in the shop all weekend. I said, well, that's what happens in the fruit and veg trade. Jazz, you will always be second fiddle to his beans. For once, she didn't argue back. 7:30 p.m. Angus loves bonfire night. The dog next door has to be locked in a padded cell. It's so frightened, but Angus loves it. He chases the rockets. He probably thinks they are grouse on fire. There's a big bonfire out in the back fields. All the street is going. I'm not, though, because I know that firelight emphasizes my nose. I could wear a hat, I suppose. Is that my life, then, going around wearing a hat? No, I'll just stay in my bedroom and watch other people having fun through the window. 10 p.m. Brilliant bonfire. I love bonfire night. I had baked potatoes and got chatted up by a boy from up the street. He looks a bit like Mick Jagger, although not, of course, 80. He said, "See you around," when I left to come home. I think he might go to the thick boys' school, but hey, ho, he can be my bit of rough. Snigger, snigger. Angus is curled up on my bed, which means I can't straighten my legs, but I daren't move him. He's got a singed ear, and his whiskers are burnt off, but he's purring. Wednesday, November the 11th, 4:20 p.m. Jazz comes round for a bit of a talk after school. I make her my special milky coffee drink. She starts to moan on. Tom is going to be working again this weekend. I said, "Well, I told you, it's a family business." I felt like a very wise person. Also, I've never said family business in my life. Oy vey. Jazz didn't seem to notice my newfound wisdom. She just raved on. I don't know. I mean, I really, really like him. But I want to have fun. I don't want to have to be all serious and think about the future and never go out. I'd really got into the swing of my new role now. Look, Jazz, you're intelligent. See what I mean? I could say these things without any hint of sarcasm. You're a good-looking young girl. The world is at your feet. Do you want to end up with a fruit and veg man? Stay with him, and the next thing you know, you'll have 5 children and be up at dawn arguing about cabbages. Look what happened to my mom, I said meaningfully. Jazz has been following me up until that point. But then she said, "What did happen to your mom?" And I said, "She got dad." Jazz said, "Oh, I see what you mean." Monday, November 16th, 4:10 p.m. Jazz has finished with Tom. She came in all ash-faced and swollen-eyed this morning. I had to wait until break to talk to her. We went to the tennis courts, even though it was bloody freezing. I'm going to persevere with my bra, even if it does bunch up. I think my breasts are definitely growing. Fondling is supposed to make them bigger. Melanie Griffith must do nothing but fondle hers. They're gigantic. Anyway, Jazz told me the whole thing about Tom and how she has now become a dumper. Verb to dump. I dump, you dump, he, she, it dumps, etc. Jazz said he was upset and angry at the time. He said he thought we were good together. Jazz looked as if she was about to cry again, so I put my arm around her. Then I took it away quickly. I don't want to start the lesbian rumor again. I said, "Jazz, there's plenty of other boys. You deserve better than a greengrocer with a horrible bigger brother." 10 p.m. Oh, dear God, Jazz on the phone again. Has she done the right thing, etc., etc., etc.? I must get her interested in someone else. Thursday, November 19th, 8 p.m. Drama, drama. We had a substitute teacher today for biology. No, I don't mean substitute. I mean reserve. No, I don't mean that. I mean, oh, anyway, a student teacher. She was very nervous and very short-sighted, and we'd all got that mad bug that you get some days when you can't stop laughing. The student teacher, Miss Idris, asked me to hand out pipettes or something, and I tried to get up, only to find that Ellen and Jules had tied my science overall straps to the drawer handles. They were helpless with laughter, and so couldn't undo them. It took me ages to get free. Then Rosie wrote a note. This is the plan. Operation Movo Dexgo. Whenever Miss Iris writes on the board, we all shift our desks back a couple of centimeters, really quietly. By the end of the lesson, when she looked round from the board, we were all squashed up against the back wall, and there was a 3-meter gap in front of her. We were speechless with laughing. She just blinked through her glasses and didn't say anything. Then it happened. Jazz and I got to the school gate, and Robbie was there. For one moment, I thought he had realized that it was me he wanted, and not old Dumbo. But he gave me a horrible look as I passed by. I said to Jazz, "Did you see that? What's he got against me? All right. He's seen my knickers, but it's not a hanging offense." Jazz went a bit red. I said, "Do you know something I don't?" And she said nervously in a rush, "Well, maybe. I think he's a bit cross because Tom's upset we're not going out." And I said it was partly because I'd spoken to you and you had said I really shouldn't go out with someone in a fruit and veg shop because it was not really good enough for me. Well, you did say that. I got hold of her by her tie. "You said what?" She just blinked and went pink and white. Midnight. I cannot believe it. Stabbed in the back by my so-called best friend. No wonder Robbie is so moody and stroopy with me. Monday, November 23rd, 4:15 p.m. Terrible day. Jackie suggested that we do something to pass the time in German. While Herr Kamer amused himself, declining verbs on the blackboard. What a stupid language German is. You have to wait until the end of the sentence to find out what the verb is. But my attitude by then is, who cares? I think I might start calling my father Vader and my mom Mutter, just for a change. Vadi and Muddy, for short. Anyway, Jackie said we should mark each other out of 10 for physical attractiveness. The list was skin, hair, eyes, nose, figure, mouth, teeth. You had to write out the list and put your name on the top of the paper and then pass it round to everyone to give you a mark. It was Jackie, Allison, Jazz, Rosie, Jules, Ellen, and Beth Morgan. I didn't want to do it, but you don't say no to Jackie. I more or less gave everyone near top marks for everything, even in the face of obvious evidence to the contrary. For instance, I gave Beth 7 for her teeth. My logic was that they might be nice when the front ones grow back in. You never know. All the marks were given unanimously. Then we got our papers back with the marks listed. My list was skin 7, hair 8, eyes 7, nose 4, figure 7, mouth 6, teeth 8. Someone gave me a 0 for my nose. I got the lowest marks out of anyone. My best feature was my teeth. Jazz had got mostly 8s for all of her features, and so she was in that really annoying mood. When you've done quite well in an exam and it makes you sort of kind to people who haven't done as well, we compared marks on the way home. You've got more marks for your mouth than me, Jazz. What's wrong with mine? Why is yours so much better? Did you give me 6 1/3? That looks like your handwriting. She was squirming a bit by now. Does it? No, I don't think it is. Then I had her, well, if it's not that one, you must have given me even less than that. She backed down. Oh, yes, actually, yes, that is my handwriting, yes. I was livid. What is wrong with my mouth? Nothing. That's why I've given you a 6 1/3. But that's only average. Well, I know. I would have given you more because I think that it's definitely 7 or even an 8 when it's closed. When it's closed? I said dangerously. Jazz was as red as 2 beetroots. Well, I had to consider things overall. You see, it's your smile. What about my smile? Well, when you smile, because your mouth is so big, yes, do go on. Well, it sort of splits your face in half, and it spreads your nose out more. And unfortunately, this is where I'm going to have to stop today because we are out of time. I hope that everyone enjoyed today's program as much as I did. I want to say hi to all the listeners out there, and I want to encourage everyone to tune in next week when I continue with the interesting novel titled Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging, Confessions of Georgia Nicholson. Until then, I hope everyone has a great day and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Goodbye.